Elissa Walker Campbell, we want to welcome you back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Happy Father's Day to all of you, and we are so excited. Our next segment is our Under the Helmet with Jason Peter, three-time national champion at the University of Nebraska. And I know you're kicking back and going to have a good time golfing on this Father's Day. How are you, Jason?
I'm good. How are you? Yeah, I'm looking forward to this Father's Day. Myself and My charitable partner and Larry the Cable Guy we're going to make a little trip out west, or not west, but north central Nebraska to play Sandhills Golf Course, which has been rated by many publications over the years as the top golf course in the United States and one of the best in the world. So looking forward to it.
Jason Peter with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. In our first segment, we focus so much on the NBA Finals. We've had a good time hooping it up and talking some NBA, but let's shift avenues because the BCS is approaching the brink of establishing a four-team playoff. And Jason, it's been a while since we've had a chance to visit with you about this. What do you think about the latest and how this will impact the college game?
Well, it seems like it's going to get done. They're just kind of working the particulars out. I guess they're not sure if it's just going to be a plus one model or if it will be a four-team playoff. But I know there have been certain things that have been eliminated, such as the status quo, and I know they've also eliminated, I guess, campus sites for the playoff game, which I don't agree with, and maybe it's because I played at Nebraska, a Midwest school, where the weather is a factor, but this was always an issue, even with the bowl games, when you have some of these cold weather teams having to go and play in a warm environment. It's something that's different maybe than what they're used to, at least for the better half of a college football season, where, you know, schools from up in this region are playing half of their games in cold weather. But, you know, it was always something where maybe the other team kind of had an advantage because, number one, they're closer to the stadium than maybe schools from up north. Obviously, the weather can be a factor, and I just think, you know, if you're playing the best four teams at the end of the year, why not travel? I mean, what's the big deal if Alabama or Florida have to travel up to Nebraska or Michigan? I mean, is that the worst thing in the world? I think for the championship game, certainly it can be bid out. Like, it seems that's kind of the path that they're going down, is that it's just pretty much for sale, and whoever is going to cough up the most money will ultimately get that. But why not for those playoff games? Why not have them on campus? Haven't those teams that have finished in the top four teams in the country, don't they deserve a playoff game at their place? I don't think it's the craziest thing, and I think it kind of it's neat to have a warm weather team maybe come and play in a cold environment. It's always the opposite, where the cold weather teams are going, and I know it's partly the vacation for some of the cold weather teams. You know, that's the way they look at it, or at least maybe that's the way that they're sold it. But I think that I think it would be a nice change to have warm weather teams take a couple visits to cold weather places in December. You know, it's something that the elements are part of football, and I think it should work kind of both ways.
Just a few more minutes this weekend on the Big E Sports Show with our favorite guest, Jason Peter, with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. And Jason, what are you hearing as far as what kind of additional revenue will this bring into the game with this four-team playoff?
Well, I know it will be in the positive, that's for sure. Otherwise, they wouldn't even be talking about it. I mean, let's face it, for as much as we all have our hearts invested in certain teams and different schools and programs, the powers that be, the guys that are making these decisions, sometimes, I mean, even though they're the president of a school, there's maybe no tie there for them. It's a job. It doesn't mean that they went to school. It doesn't mean that that's the schools that they're really pulling for on Saturday afternoon. But, you know, these guys, they make these decisions based upon the money that ultimately these schools will receive. And I don't know an exact dollar amount to, you know, what these schools would make. Obviously, the television contract for a four-team playoff and ultimately a championship game, I'm sure would be absurd. And you know, they've already, like I said, made clear that the championship game will go to the highest bidder. And it eliminates, I'm sure, a lot of games, bowl games, right away. You're looking at, I'm sure, the Rose Bowl, the Orange Bowl, the Fiesta. And, you know, you never know what somebody like Jerry Jones is willing to do. A lot of people think that Cotton Bowl, you know, when they were talking about the Fiesta Bowl and all the controversy happening out there and maybe kicking it out of the BCS, that the Cotton Bowl would ultimately be a nice fix, that it's already treated as almost a BCS-type game. You could easily see somebody like Jerry Jones ponying up enough money to outbid, you know, the rest of the schools, no matter, or the rest of the bowl games, no matter how prestigious they are. You know, they've made clear that, I guess, tradition of the game won't really matter. It's going to come down to dollar amount. And that's pretty much, I think, par for the course. I mean, everything in life now has pretty much turned to the highest bidder. And in a lot of ways, it's a shame, but it seems, you know, college football, it's clearly a business, and that's been made clear to everybody over the years.
Jason, we've got 30 seconds, and this is a question that we could talk about even next week, but you graduated from the University of Nebraska in 97. How much would you have loved to have had this be a part of the game during those playing days?
It would have been great because, I mean, you mentioned 97. That was the year when we won the coaches' national championship, and Michigan won the AP, and it would have been a perfect time, to at least for a plus one model, to say, here you have these two undefeated teams, let's settle it on the field. And it's the way that it should be settled. And I think, you know, in the beginning, I wasn't somebody who thought, let's change, let's go to this college playoff. And let's face it, I mean, when the talk first started, it wasn't about a four-team or a plus-one model. I think everyone was looking at maybe how, you know, the former Division I AA did it, where you have, you know, a handful of teams, and you kind of go through the bracket, almost like the NCAA basketball tournament. And that's obviously something that really changes college football. This is, I think, it's just an addition. And I know that there was a time back in 1994 when we ended up being national champs as well, but Penn State also was an undefeated football team. And we were going to play Miami in the Orange Bowl, a team that really had, I guess, no impact that year, at least on winning the championship. If we didn't win and Penn State did, it was going to go to Penn State, being that they were undefeated. But I know that Tom Osborne had actually made a phone call to Joe Paterno prior to the bowl game saying, you know, is there anything that we can do where we could maybe get our two teams to play in a national championship type game. And you know, Joe Paterno made clear that, you know, they were tied into the Rose Bowl, and it would have been something, you know, maybe it was just kind of just make-believe in Tom Osborne's head that, you know, they'd be able to change something like that kind of last minute. But, you know, I think it was maybe more about him saying, you know, you deserve just as much of a shot at the national championship as we do. But, yeah, I think in everybody's mind and heart, anybody who's ever been associated with college football, I think when you win a championship, you want to win it because you're the best team, not because you won the system or you beat the system. You want to be there in the end saying, there's nobody else in this country, no other school that can make a run, at least when we're out on the field. And you know, there's nothing better than that. And it's walking off the field knowing that you're the best team, and it's not because of any other reason other than you play the best football.
Jason, that is some great perspective. Thanks so much for stopping by, and enjoy the rest of your Father's Day weekend.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to be right back with much more here in just a minute on the Big E Sports Show. Stay close. Support for programming comes from Pinnacle Bank, where serving customers beyond day-to-day transactions is the Texas way. Pinnacle Bank provides solutions based on local needs and personal relationships. And at Pinnacle Bank, we think that's the way banking should be. Visit us online at PINNBANKTX.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big.
Elissa Walker Campbell, I want to welcome you back to the Big E Sports Show. Hey, as promised, we have got an extra special program straight ahead as we are celebrating Father's Day this weekend. Today, we're going to be doing something a little bit different as I have asked my dad, Charlie Walker, a 39-year member, almost 40-year member of the Grand Ole Opry. He is in the Texas Country Music Hall of Fame to join us. We're going to take time to reflect on his illustrious career in country music and entertainment. Plus, we're also going to talk about his close relationships with so many of sports finest, from Joe DiMaggio to Mickey Mantle, so many great ones that dad has had the opportunity to rub shoulders with. We are so pleased to introduce to all of you this weekend from Nashville, Tennessee, the very fine, my father, Charlie Walker of the Grand Ole Opry. Dad, happy Father's Day.
Hey, thank you, Alyssa. Boy, you really give me a build-up there. That's good.
Well, you deserve it, Dad. You've earned it. You're 80 years old, right?
Well, you didn't have to tell that, but they know I've been on the Opry as long as I've been. Of course, when I tell them I was in World War II, and when they know that, then they know you're not a kid anymore.
That's right. Well, 80 years going strong. We're celebrating your life, and of course, we're celebrating your incredible career in country music. And there are so many amazing memories and moments to talk about, but one of the things that I wanted to start our conversation off today is about the tournament, your celebrity golf tournament that is held every year, the Shriner Celebrity Golf Tournament. It's very close to your heart. Talk about your love for the game of golf and how you've been able to parlay that into raising money for the Shriners Children's Hospital. Dad?
Well, we just had our fifth one here, and they're already working on the sixth one, which will be next spring. We have, you know, in the United States, Canada, and Mexico, we have, I think it's 25 Shriners hospitals, and they're for children under 18 years old. We have our annual budget. It may be a little up from that now, but the last time I met with the Grand Potentate of the Shrine, it was $500 million a year. So we need all the help we can get to raise money for those kids. Anyway, they have a Shriners Hospital in, you know, all over St. Louis and Boston. I've entertained at most of those, or a lot of them, and it's always a thrill to get to go and hear those little kids listen to you sing, and you know, so.
Well, it really is, and Dad, you know, when you talk about the Shriners Children's Hospital, a terrific organization, and as you had just mentioned, an awesome budget, but what is so fantastic is how they really are committed to helping families, and families that are in crisis, and as you had said, you've had the chance to entertain and go out and meet those children that, you know, are in crisis and are hurting.
I entertained one time when I headlined the rodeo in San Antonio. I went out and entertained at one of the hospitals there, and all these little kids, the lady in charge told me, she says, Charlie, she says, you don't know this, but she said, within the next 2 weeks, every child in this room will be dead.
Wow.
And I've still got, they all signed this big card for me, saying that I was coming to entertain them, and I wouldn't take anything for it. I feel bad, and I don't hardly ever look at it, but it's realizing that all those little kids died, you know.
Absolutely. Hey, we are going one-on-one right here on the Big East Sports Show with my dad, Charlie Walker, a 39-year member of the Grand Ole Opry. He's in the Texas Country Music Hall of Fame, the Disc Jockey Hall of Fame. The list goes on and on, Dad. But as we were talking about your golf tournament and raising money for the Shriners Children's Hospital, I thought what was so impressive about the tournament is every single year you have such a great and strong turnout of celebrities, the country music legends from Jim Ed Brown, Jan Howard, so many of them that come out to support your cause and trying to raise money for this hospital.
Well, yeah, then I have several golf pros that come out, like my friend Jackie Cupid. He and I have been friends since the 50s, and he comes over here every year and plays in it. Of course, Jackie's getting on up there in age, too. He's, he's not quite as old as I am, but he can still hit that ball. He's one of the great golfers of all time, as you probably know, and he won four tournaments and tied on several others, but he's the head pro at a country club up in East Texas, and he comes every year and plays in my tournament.
Well, they know him well. They know the name Jackie Cupid very well out here in the state of Texas. Of course, he's in the Texas Golf Hall of Fame.
Boy, he's a great golfer. I mean, just, you know, he wasn't one of the longest knockers on the tour, but, I mean, he hit it straight down the middle every time, and if you can do that, why, you're going to not getting any trouble.
Well, he won, as you said, four PGA Tour events, but, you know, I'm wondering with the U.S. Open going on this weekend, what he would have thought of that course as playing on it.
Well, I'm sure he played on it. It's a great course, but I played in the Pro-Am at that course, and I never had played the course before, and this pro that I was playing with was from up there, and the first hole, I knocked it up there, knocked it in for a birdie. And the next hole, it almost went in for another birdie, and this pro says to me,
"Wow,
hey, listen, Walker," he says, "this is not an easy course." He
it's
said,
not.
"You know, you've almost made two birdies in a row." I beat the pro. I think he shot 81 or something, and I shot 75, but I never had played that course, but it's a beautiful course, and all the greats that have played it, you know, so.
We've heard all week long, too, Dad, that a lot of people are labeling it as maybe the toughest course in the country, that it is very humbling and it is frustrating for the golfer. So it's awesome to hear that you were so successful when you did have the chance to play on it.
Yeah, well, I won the amateur part of the tournament, and we got, I don't remember what it was, I think it was $750 worth of golf equipment. Well, I didn't need any golf equipment because I got enough now to take up two rooms. But anyway, so I told these ladies that was in charge of the charity, I forget which it was, that they could just have my winnings. And they couldn't believe it. One of them said, "You know, as many of these tournaments as we've had, we've never had anybody give their winnings back."
My.
And I said, "Well, I don't really need the golf equipment. And you're not allowed to take cash anyway." You know, I know Mickey Mantle one time, he played in a tournament and won a car for hitting a hole-in-one. And do you know that it was a PGA tournament, and he couldn't play in a PGA tournament for 5 years because he accepted that car. So, I had a lot of friends in the baseball and football, and Joe DiMaggio, and Mickey Mantle, and Billy Martin, and all these guys were good friends of mine. And, of course, Mickey lived there in Dallas, and every time I'd play anywhere near Dallas, they'd all come out. Gabe Brewer at that time lived there, and he won the Masters 1 year, and Jackie Cupid and Billy Maxwell, and used to have some great times. I'd play that Longhorn Ballroom out there in Dallas, and when I played it, all these guys would come out, you know. And I played there one New Year's Eve, and we had the biggest crowd they'd ever had, he said. And it was a big club. That Longhorn Ballroom was very big. And the guy that owned it came over to me at our table. I was sitting there with Gabe Brewer, Mickey Mantle, Billy Maxwell, and Jackie Cupid. And he came over and said, "Whenever you get back up there, Charlie," said, "we've got celebrities here. We should mention they were here." I said, "Yeah, I know. I'm sitting with them." He said, "Oh, no." He never thought of them as celebrities because they came out there a lot. No, we had Lamar Hunt. Anyway, he had a party of about 20 people. And with them, all the money that they had, he could have been in Paris, France, or anywhere on New Year's Eve, but he came out to hear me say. And so I got up and talked about them and said that they were good to have them.
It is our Father's Day special right here on the Big East Sports Show. It's a special interview, an exclusive one. We are talking with my dad, Charlie Walker, of the Grand Ole Opry out there in Nashville, Tennessee. He's in the Texas Country Music Hall of Fame and having a lot of fun. And, you know, quickly, Dad, before we talk about your illustrious career, I think what's really fascinating is just your love, your passion for the game of golf. And you had the opportunity to play in many pro-ams. Did you ever play here? You played in the Colonial. Did you play in the Byron Nelson Golf Tournament?
I don't remember. I don't think I played in the Byron Nelson, but I played in the Colonial about four or five times. And
you got a funny story to share about playing in the Colonial tournament too, don't you?
Oh well, yeah. There was several of us that played. Then we'd always at the banquet at night get up and sing. There was me and Glenn Campbell and Charlie Pride and I don't know, two or three others. And but anyway, Glenn Campbell hit his ball on the 18th hole, and it was on the green, and some strip club there in Fort Worth had sent one of their girls out there to get some publicity for the club, and she had hardly nothing on, or not very much, and she ran out there and ran on the green, picked up Campbell's ball, and took off with it. Well, all these photographers, naturally, they were interested. They just left the golf, followed her around. They caught her, and it was all over the papers, you know. But it was funny how that some of those things happened at these golf tournaments.
I did want to talk about the fact that you've had a chance to do a little bit of that. Chris Schenkel asked you to do some field reporting, on the Texas Open?
I did the Texas Open, I think about 4 years in a row, I believe. And Chris Schenkel at that time had the number one sports show in the country. And he would... It went all over the world, Australia and every place. And he passed away not too long ago, I noticed, in the papers. But he was, he said, and now we take you to San Antonio, Texas, for the Texas Open, and worldwide sports announcer Charlie Walker. And then I'd come in and talk for about a minute and a half and then take it back to him, you know. But, I did that for several years. It was, I have had a... You know, I was in broadcasting in San Antonio for about 20 years, and I'm, of course, in the Disc Jockey Hall of Fame, and I'm also in the Broadcasters Hall of Fame, and Texas Country Music Hall of Fame. I'm in enough Hall of Fames, it's...
But your show was like a five-hour show every day, right?
I did... split time. I did 6 to 8 in the morning and 3 to 6 in the afternoon. It was what we call drive time, where everybody was going to work, and we had nearly everybody in town listen to the program. I had the only country music show and the only one in the United States that had 5 hours, because in those days that was from the early 50s to 65. So the people that had owned radio stations, they thought the only people listening to country music was out in the barn milking cows at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they'd put country music on. And this guy at the radio station told me, he said, "I want you to go on that air, do anything, say anything you want to about anything or anybody." He said, "All I want you to do is make me a lot of money," and I did. Man, I sold everything that they had, from insurance to baby chicks and everything else, you know.
Also with your program, I think one of the interesting stories that you've got to share is that Red McCombs was a big supporter and sponsor of your program, correct?
Yeah, Red was, he was already a millionaire, but it was before he became as wealthy as he did. But he would call me and say, "Hey, let's meet down here at this bar and we need to talk about some spots that you're running and so forth." And I said, "Okay." So, no, we were very good friends, and I went to see him one time when he had the San Antonio Spurs, and went out to see him. I hadn't seen him in about 10 years, and he was so glad to see me and so forth. He said, "What are you doing tonight?" And I said, "Well, I was going to go get me some good Mexican food, because they do have some of the best there in San Antonio." And he said, "How would you like to sing the Star Spangled Banner tonight in our basketball game?" He said, "We're playing the New York Knickerbockers and national television." I said, "Shoot, yeah, I'd like to do that." So he's picked up the phone, called out there, said, "A friend of mine is in town from the Grand Ole Opry. I'd like to have him sing the Star Spangled Banner tonight." And that's all there was to it.
Oh, that is great.
So, well, yeah.
Well, and we've had Red McCombs on the program before, and he's certainly a big fan of yours, and certainly had a lot of great things to say about you. Millions of fans know his name worldwide. I'm talking with my dad, Charlie Walker, of the Grand Ole Opry there in Nashville, Tennessee. And you know what's interesting, Dad? Every week on our program, we talk with sports personalities, and they share how, you know, they got their foot in their door. They got that first big break. As you reflect over your career, is there one particular person that you point to for giving you that opportunity and that big break?
Well, as far as recordings go, and that's where a lot of my, you know, really worldwide stuff happened, Ernest Tubb helped me in 1954 to get a record contract with Decca Records. And from then on, it was, then I had Ray Price help me get on Columbia, and it was just, you know, everything since. And I had, of course, some really big hits, and that Pick Me Up On Your Way Down was one of the biggest hits of country music ever recorded by anybody. And you realize that that song was out, it come next year, it'll be 50 years.
My goodness.
Oh, I'll tell you, time is really, really scooting on by.
It absolutely is. And one of the things I want to tell all of our listening audience is I was Googling your name last night on the computer, Dad. You can go to countrymusictelevision.com, CMT.com. Dad, they've got your full bio on there. If people want to pick up copies of your discography, it's a compilation of all of your greatest hits and also your greatest honky-tonk hits is also on that website as well, Dad. When was that released?
Well, that was released about a year and a half ago, I guess. That was a CD. In those days, we made records for jukeboxes. Nearly all of our songs were what we call drinking songs, honky-tonk songs, divorce songs, and sad songs, you know. But these guys would get off work in the afternoon, and they'd stop off at a little beer joint and have them a beer, and they'd put a nickel in those days, or a dime maybe it was, in the jukebox. And they'd play a song. If they liked it, they'd play it over and over and over. And that Pick Me Up was on every jukebox in the country. You couldn't find one. Didn't have it on there. So it did a lot of good. So
it's done very good. Pick Me Up On Your Way Down. What are some of the others that our listening audience would recognize? Tell Her Lies and Feed Her Candy, right?
Tell Her Lies and Feed Her Candy. I had Close All the Honky Tonks, Don't Squeeze My Charmin, Little Old Wine Drinker Me.
I Wouldn't Take Her to a Dog Fight. That's a great one.
I Wouldn't Take Her to a Dog Fight, yeah. I had a whole bunch of stuff, you know.
Very good. Just a few more minutes right here on the Big E Sports Show. We're talking with my dad, Charlie Walker, of the Grand Ole Opry. And, Dad, we just wanted to have you on the program today. Wish you happy Father's Day. And I know hopefully all of us, we're going to try to come out in some time in July and spend some time with you. But we love you, Dad. We're so proud of all of your accomplishments and all that you've done.
I love all you guys. And I love Texas. You know, I grew up on a cotton farm out there in northeast Dallas in Collin County. Picked cotton from daylight till dark all my young life, till I got into singing on the radio. And I started out, first time I ever sung on the radio was on KRLD there in Dallas at the Adolphus Hotel. And it was the Texas Roundup gang, and they put me on. I was about 14, maybe 15 years old. I got the call.
I know you do, Dad. Well, listen, happy Father's Day, and I'll catch up with you in a little bit, okay?
I love you, huh?
Love you, too.